Do you spend a lot of time in planes, trains, and automobiles? Then you should try an audiobook. Audiobooks can help you read on the go. And Penguin Random House Audio offers innovative professional tips from successful business influencers such as Charles Duhigg and Sheryl Sandberg, or turn off your work mode and relax with a novel by Jonathan Kellerman or Steve Barry. Visit tryaudiobooks.com for more listening suggestions.
Hello and welcome to Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal. From the newsroom in New York, I'm Tanya Bustos. David Friedman of WealthX talks about the issues plaguing the ultra-wealthy and how they can better manage their financial concerns. He is breaking it all down on the Watching Your Wealth podcast, coming up.
From Wall Street to Main Street to your street, this is Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal. Money news that helps your bottom line.
This is Veronica Dagger, and you're listening to Watching Your Wealth, while you learn all you need to know about building your wealth and protecting your money. WealthX David Friedman is here to tell us about the top concerns of the ultra-wealthy. Welcome, David.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. David, you said globally succession and inheritance issues are a top concern for the ultra-wealthy. Tell us about that.
Yes. So one of the, you know, people primarily when they think about the wealthy, and if you look at all the industries on the financial services side, people often think that the number one issue is taxes. And while estate taxes, in particular for the U.S., for U.S. citizens, are a primary issue or are very important, what really keeps the ultra-wealthy up at night is how do I make sure that I don't disincentivize my children by giving them too much and make sure that they grow up? And how do I pass on my values in a way that inculcates it for them and continues my legacy? And these are extremely delicate, complicated challenges. I mean, it's not an easy thing when you have substantial wealth without values embedded in that wealth, you know, you can go off the rails. I mean, the easiest example of that, and this doesn't apply to most of the ultra affluent, but the easiest example are lottery ticket winners, mm-hmm. right? Which a large percentage end up either committing suicide or alcoholics, right? Because they're just not ready for that wealth, right?
Right. So how do you cope with this kind of wealth, and how do you instill that work ethic in your kid when conceivably they don't need to work, or their kids may not even need to work because you have so much money if you're an ultra wealthy person? So it's an interesting challenge. Most people don't face it, but if you do face it, it is a real issue. Are you seeing anyone creatively handling that? And how I would imagine it really depends by family, but.
Right. I mean, we work so. It's not a new issue. I mean, this goes back. If you think about the Rothschilds, one of the interesting things about the original Rothschilds was the structure that was given for the four, I think it was four sons, who were geographically diversified across Europe. They each were not just given money. They each had to were given a low-interest loan from the patriarch, but they had to set up these banks in different parts of Europe. But one of the key provisions was that if you took the loan, then you had to share information with everyone else. And so he created this structure where his family, they weren't just given the money. They had to, from a performance standpoint, they had to meet certain objectives. Interestingly enough, though, from a macroeconomic perspective, you know, a lot of the ventures they had got torn up in terms of military and the wars that went on in Europe. So, but I have to say that one of the big trends is the growth of what's called the multifamily office. So these are firms like Bessemer Trust. There's firms here in the U.S., U.S. Trust, and so forth. So there's smaller boutique firms like Gresham, Northern Trust. All these firms are basically creating infrastructure and pivoting towards providing more soft-type services that have to do with families and values. Everyone knows that this is on the heart of their clients, and so you know, it ranges from on-site psychologists who come in and sit down with the family to family counseling services who come in. I just spoke at a conference in Sydney, and on the panel with me were groups of men. Several of them do exactly this. They sit down and say, let's write the family constitution. And as part of that process, they say, you know, what are the objectives and goals? And they use that as a way to kind of basically surface disagreement between the first and second generations, for example. So there's a huge push to address this issue because, And frankly, it's good for business. This is one of the stickiest ways to get clients and keep them.
Indeed. I was just going to say the issues really vary by the generation. And so, it's obviously in these firms' best interest to keep those people as their client. But I think the point that you're raising is, educating that younger generation about how the money was made, the challenges those other generations faced, that they didn't always have the money, perhaps, and what they had to overcome. I think that can be a very powerful way to connect to that younger generation. I want to go back to some of the worries facing the ultra wealthy. You said taxes wasn't the top worry. It's still a big worry, so I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. But another interesting point is that you said in certain areas of the world, personal security is a big concern for the ultra wealthy. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so personal security is obviously a growing concern. We have a partner out in San Francisco that provides personal security for some of the top and wealthiest families in the world. And they'll tell you, obviously this is an issue. They'll also tell you that some people make too big of an issue of it. In other words, if you put the black sedans and bodyguards around, then you draw more attention. and so oftentimes, as he put it, it's better to have much more subtle, especially in places like Silicon Valley and some of the folks he works with there.
Thank you so much for joining us, David. It's been so interesting.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Look forward to the next time.
My pleasure. This has been Watching Your Wealth, a production of The Wall Street Journal. I'm Veronica Dagger. For more information, check us out at WSJ.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening.